S73876. Mr. Huffland, if you are ready to proceed, please do so. If you wish to reserve time, please so state.
Your Honor, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
And just for the record, I would note Justice Hardesty is not present. He has read the briefs and will listen to the oral arguments and participate in the outcome.
May I please the court? Good morning, Justices. The case that we have before us is a case which was brought before an order which is issued by the lower court, in which that order was issued, which was clearly erroneous. Today, before the court, we have the appellant, Ramon Palacios. Mr. Palacios is the father of the child at issue in this case, A.S., and two other minor children. When this case was brought, the issue which was brought before the court has been looked at, and that issue is clearly erroneous based upon a couple different factors. And those factors is that the lower court did not follow the precedent set by this court and by the United States Supreme Court. This court, in the case of Laughlin in 1995, clearly made the decision and made the reasoning of the distinction between guardianships. And the distinction between guardianships are those guardianships which are issued based upon the judicial determination whether or not that there is consent or whether or not there is a finding of a parent being unfit. In the Laughlin decision, this court and its reasoning quoted that it does not want to discourage parents from willingly granting temporary guardianships while working through problems in their own lives if that is in the child's best interest. In doing so, the court remained granting the party that gave the consent to the guardianship to have the parental preference. That same parental preference was followed in the case, the subsequent case, which was reaffirmed in the Laughlin case. In the Laughlin case, it came back under the same premise. In that case, which disclosed the fact, is that in the Litz case, that the guardianship was for 8 years. In the Laughlin case, that it was for 9 years. In that case, the guardians, in that case, objected, and they objected to the fact is that they did not believe that the standard was being applied correctly of the unfitness. In that case, the court came back again, reaffirmed that it did not want to discourage parents from willingly granting temporary guardianships while working through the problems in their own lives if that is in the child's best interest. And the court in that case came back, and you reaffirmed the fact is that in order to find a parent to be unfit and to lose the parental preference, you have to show two things. Either the parent is unfit, or that there is a finding of extraordinary circumstances. The court didn't find extraordinary circumstances in that case and remained the parental preference in place. That same parental preference came back through the evolution of other cases in 2003 in the DRG case. In the DRG case, this court came back and made the distinction regards to, in that case, made the finding that the parent was unfit by the lower court, but held and made a determination as to what circumstances constitute extraordinary circumstances.
Mr. Hoffman, not totally clear to me because of the factual nature of this case. Was the guardianship order that was originally entered a final order or only a temporary order?
It didn't say whether it was a final or temporary order, Judge. I don't know the answer to that question other than that.
And would it make a difference based on our factual situation?
I don't believe so. I think that it's still remaining to keep in place the parental preference is not stripped of a parent. In this case, the lower court incorrectly stripped the parent of the parental preference, which misapplying the new law which has been put into place of 159A 1905, which now places a burden on the parent, even though that they gave the consent. This court recently, in the Sell case in 2018, this June, came back and made a determination that a parent only has to show that it's in the best interest. And this court again came back and looked at the parental preference again and said the parent still maintains that parental preference.
And don't we additionally take into consideration the best interest of the child?
Well, yes, Your Honor, but comes to looking at which statute that you're looking at. If you're looking at 159A as it was, 159-1905 as it was written before, is that you're to look at the best interest and use as a burden as clear and convincing evidence in which to terminate the guardianship. Now that's changed with the 159A-1905, and in that case, in that statute, it requires that there is the petitioner must, or the parent must show by clear and convincing evidence that there's a change in circumstances. And the change in circumstances, they have to also show that they're suitable, so which is giving the belief that the court has taken a look at is that there was a finding of unfitness. Maybe, hopefully, I'm just laying out the law first and wanted to go back and argue it. I mean, the issue is going back to is making the determination as to the law is that guardianships which are entered into by consent rather than by a finding have different rules in which to terminate those, which this court has recognized over and over again. But the statute, the way that it's written, makes the application to all parties, which this court recently in Sells has recognized the fact that that's not what the status of the law is. There is a distinction which the parent never loses. I mean, the point I'm trying to make is that there's a distinction that that a parent never loses is that they always maintain the parental preference and that they don't have to show these other factors because it's taking away their own rights. So the concern is that the statute, the way that it is applied right now, is that it is taking away a parent's rights, which they otherwise wouldn't have to be stripped of. And making them prove things and going through proving that there is the best interest or a change in circumstances that's not convincing evidence is certainly not what what this court has ordered over and over again in the Litz case, the Lachlan case, and what the U.S. Supreme Court has done in several different cases. So the concern is that the statute being applied is being applied requiring that a parent must show and overcome a change in circumstances by clear and convincing evidence or showing that they're suitable, which is different from what the protections under the law provide for them.
So what would you have us do in this case?
That the statutes which are applied under 159A-1905 or 159 and the prior statutes are only applicable to statutes when there are situations which occur, which there's been a finding of either parental unfitness, that a parent is unfit, or extraordinary circumstances. In the Hudson case, this court as well found that, in that case, that there was a finding that there was already a custody determination. In order to change the custody determination, that the court had to, or the applicant, had to make a determination and show that they no longer have the parental preference. They have to show that they're suitable again. So we're asking the court, is that 159A, when the parent consents, they don't have to go through the rigorous and the higher standards, and those standards being that they have to show that there's a change in circumstances by clear and convincing evidence, or that they're suitable again, because there's never been a finding that they were not suitable.
So, Mr. Hoffman, would you have us reverse and remand to the court to apply the parental preference in this matter? Is that what you'd be suggesting?
Yes. I mean, apply the parental preference and or, I mean, there's also the facts in this case is that my client was never served initially with the underlying petition. I don't know. I mean, that's kind of a red herring on that issue a little bit. But
well, because he stipulated to the guardianship, that issue, it seems as if that piece of that issue is off the table. I think the real question for us is, does he have the ability to pull it back now?
Yes.
And that would seem to be a matter of whether the court was erred in not applying the parental preference and putting the burden on him.
Yes.
Okay.
To give another example, there was parents in different situations. When they entered into a guardianship in which to allow the grandparents or somebody else in which to have a temporary guardianship in which to have to place a child in school or to get health insurance, or to take care of a child because they're going to be away on vacation for 2 or 3 months. But if you're applying the same statute to those individuals would have to go through the same standard, which is an impossible standard to show that there's a material change in circumstances. And they have to show that by clear and convincing evidence. So you have a parent that has to show that, which they're doing it for a temporary basis, which is, puts the impossible burden, which no guardianship would be terminated, because there would never be able to show the material change in circumstances if the person, well, gosh, they want to place in another school, they're able to get insurance. This court has held in other cases, as in the Laughlin case, is that all parents would, it's understood that guardians are going to provide for love and that there's a bond and that there's going to be a relationship and a need, but it does not supersede the rights of a parent. And so, yes, I would agree with that, is that the request is, in which you remanded, apply the parental preference, and that the parental preference always applies in any case when there's not a finding of unfitness or extraordinary circumstances.
So what do you do with the 2017 statute? That would be then off the table on that remand?
The application of AB 319, which came into the new statute, the 159A statute, the same thing, it has the same issue and the same problem.
It does. It has the same knot in the middle of it, right?
Yeah, it has the same exact problem. And so, again, it's discouraging parents for which they are into.
And there's a policy of if a parent is unable to care for the child temporarily, we should promote a sensible rehoming of the child temporarily, is what your argument is.
But it doesn't take away from the parental preference.
And there's no determination of unsuitability or anything else. Yeah.
And that's what the core issue of the problem is, and what we face in this case, is that the court's applying the statute rather than the law which is.
And you're saying it doesn't matter whether it's 2003 or 2017, the same problem
exists.
Yeah.
Well, it's going to be a nationwide problem, too, because the 60 Minutes found out that 1 million children in the United States are being raised by their grandparents because of opioid abuse of the parents. And certainly if the parents recover, it'd be tough to maybe terminate the guardianship under the way Judge Elliott looked at it.
Correct. I mean, Your Honor, this same law is throughout the United States. We have cited several different cases throughout the United States, which every state in which they apply the law, similarly, is any time that a guardianship has been entered into by consent, the parental preference always applies. And the parental preference, there's been other cases which says that the parental preference, the only way to lose that parental preference by consent is that there has to be a knowingly waiver of that. There was never a knowingly waiver of that.
How would you write this if you were... If your position were to be credited, how would you write this? What would be the analytics?
That the parental preference statute, parental preference remains when guardianships were issued through the consent of a parent.
Or through a flawed proceeding in which the parent was not adequately noticed and heard.
Yes, Your Honor. And then any other circumstance where the parent is found to be unfit, or extraordinary circumstances that these statutes are applicable.
Right. So it's kind of a issue preclusion. If it wasn't litigated actively and there wasn't a conscious determination or a yielding on the finding that the parent was unfit, you would say we should not imply one.
Well, implying that the parent is unfit.
Yeah.
This course defined the unfitness of parents of what things which they have done, either that they have not allowed, they've abused a child, harmed a child, and neglected a child, have done other sorts of problems and things like that, and which is not the case. Is that?
In fact, there's no record here on that.
There's no record of that, but guardianships are done every single day for a variety of different reasons, but putting every guardianship through the rigors of the guardianship which has been issued because of unfitness or extraordinary circumstances would be completely improper and against well-settled law by this court and throughout the United States and by the U.S. Supreme Court. So I have reserved some time.
We're going to give you 2 minutes on rebuttal. We're going to give counsel an additional 2 minutes for any remarks she has to make.
Good morning, Chief Justice Douglas and fellow justices. May it please the court. Arzu Peruzzi on behalf of the respondents, Rebecca and Juan Silva, for President Valerie. This seems to be the case that never ends. Once you think it's over, there's always another surprise petition or motion to terminate guardianship, motion to reconsider a prior order, or a motion to reconsider an award of attorney's fees, all ending here today with this appeal. This case started almost 4 years ago when respondents, who are the maternal grandparents of AS, filed for and obtained guardianship over him.
Counsel, as to that guardianship, the stipulation indicates that the father was stipulating to it because the children had just started school and so on, and to leave them in the school. Is this a final order? Is this just a temporary order? How should we look at that order?
Your Honor, are you referring to the stipulated agreement from the May 22nd?
No, the order that's
evidentiary hearing.
28-2017.
Correct. Your Honor, that was actually the time for evidentiary hearing set on the petition and motion to terminate the guardianship and the custody case. At that time, as everybody does, they come to court prepared to litigate the case. We had our witnesses, we had our exhibits, and the parties chose to settle. That is a final order. We placed all the terms on the record with both parties having counsel present. They were sworn in under oath and under EDCR 7.50 and Grisham versus Grisham. That was it. He waived.
The counsel, Mr. Palacios, was not represented at counsel on the stipulation. As I understood, his attorney was hired in an unbundled capacity to represent him at the evidentiary hearing, which was never held. So did he have an attorney to help him with the stipulation? I'm just looking at the record that I have.
No, that's incorrect. He did have an attorney. He was present at prior hearings. The way that that attorney runs his business is sometimes he has himself as unbundled so that that person pays for a hearing. He had represented him at previous hearings, and he was present at the evidentiary hearing. And the evidentiary hearing ended in a settlement.
Well, no, this evidentiary hearing didn't take place. Isn't that correct? Because the stipulation was entered before the evidentiary hearing took place.
No, Your Honor. The evidentiary hearing was on May 22, 2017. And because the parties came to a stipulated agreement, because they didn't want to proceed with the evidentiary hearing that same day,
okay,
everything that was in front of the court was resolved in that stipulated agreement.
So the court did not hold an evidentiary hearing. Did witnesses testify? Was there a contested evidentiary hearing on May 22nd?
No, because the parties chose to stipulate,
okay,
and place the terms on the record as to everything, as to whether or not the guardianship should be terminated, as to a custody and visitation schedule for dad, which he had every other weekend. At the 6 month point, it would increase another weekend. Child support was set. There was other orders in that final stipulated decree that state that he has to keep his weapons in a safe. Father has to keep his weapons in a safe when the child is there. He has to keep the bullets, the ammunition, away from the weapons. He cannot have his older son left alone with the minor in question. All of the terms that we were going to address at the evidentiary hearing ended in a full and complete resolution of the case. This was a final order. And that was that. And what took so long?
If we go forward then, that it's a final order, now that it's back before, that was back before the court as to terminating the guardianship, how in fact should we proceed as the issues that have been raised as the parental preference?
Your Honor, I believe that the court should proceed and hold what Judge Elliott did in the district court as how it should be. That was a final settlement. And
that's not the question. The question is, pursuant to the law, you're stripping a parent of parental preference when there was no finding that the parent was unfit. Should this court accept that? And there's nothing in the record The order that the judge entered gave us a litany of information about the grandparents and the parent, but not based upon facts in the record, but just allegations in the complaints. But we're at a point where, as you said, we have an order. The father is coming in saying, I want to terminate this guardianship. What is the law, and why should we proceed in the manner that the court proceeded?
Your Honor, when Judge Elliott made her findings, they were pursuant to NRS 159.19053, that once a guardianship has been established, the presumption shifts to the party seeking to terminate the guardianship.
And there's no, since this, the father has not been found unfit, then the parental preference should be at least examined, and it seemed not to be examined on the record we have before us. Should we be concerned about that?
You should not be concerned, because Judge Elliott was well aware of all the pleadings, and at the time of the evidentiary hearing was the time for the parties to proceed and present evidence on both the guardianship.
Judge Elliott, in the record we have on this 17th order, said, pursuant to my discretion, I don't have to have an evidentiary hearing. I could just go forward. That's what it says in the order.
Your Honor, I believe the court is misinformed. We were ready to go forward.
Counsel, it's not whether you were ready to go forward or not. I'm looking at the order that Judge Elliott entered and how she phrased her order. That's what I'm stuck with. I'm stuck with the cold record.
Opposing counsel prepared that order. I requested revisions to it that you could see on her previous order from the May 22nd, 2017 evidentiary hearing. There's writing in there. Bottom line is, at the time of the evidentiary hearing, which was scheduled for May 22nd, 2017, was the time for the parties to present their case, whether or not the guardianship was obtained fraudulently, whether or not there should be parental preference given to the appellant, what the burden of proof should be. All of that should have come out on that day.
So, Counselor, it's your position that everybody had an opportunity to proceed with the evidentiary hearing on this date. They settled it. The judge entered an order, so it's a done deal, and there's nothing. Are you saying that your opposing counsel doesn't have a right to seek termination of the guardianship? It's there forever, or what? What is your position based on the result of that hearing?
He has filed three or four motions to reconsider and, again, filed the motion and petition to terminate. In fact, we were just in front of Judge Kathy Hardcastle mid-July of this year, and she found that the appellant waived his right to, and I don't know if you guys have this order because it's brand new, we've been in front of the court so many times that he's beating a dead horse. He's bringing up the same factual allegations that could have been addressed and resolved at the evidentiary hearing, but his client, with the presence of prior counsel, agreed to keep the guardianship in place with my clients.
Okay, so to Justice Gibbons' point, there's a stipulation, so that order has been entered. Now he's moving to terminate that order. Is it your position that because of the stipulation, at his motion to terminate, he loses his parental preference?
That is not my position.
What is your position?
My position is that if he wants to, again, for the fifth time, bring another motion and petition, all of those have been adjudicated by the lower courts. Orders have been presented. He had to approve, number one, that the parental let's go back. Paternity was established on this case in January 2017. So up to that date, we didn't even know if he was the father. He had filed a complaint for custody. We didn't know, is he the father or not? The mother of this child was married to somebody else when this child was conceived. We wanted proof, having a paternity test done, all these things done to prove that he actually was the father. Now that it was found in January of 2017, 4 months later, we had the trial, and they resolved the entire case by him keeping it.
Right. Now, so you didn't have a trial. You had an evidentiary hearing that did not get held, and there was a settlement, right? There was a stipulation.
Correct. And that was based on what the parties wanted to happen that day.
Okay, so that day, counsel, that's what they wanted to happen. But some weeks later, he wanted to terminate that. That's his right to file a motion to terminate. The question is, what standard at that motion to terminate should the court have applied? Is it your position? You said it's not. But why does he lose his parental preference at that termination hearing to the fact that he willingly entered into the guardianship? There's no finding of parental unfitness. I don't think it'd be appropriate for us to comb the record to try to find an implicit finding of unfitness. It's not there. Your clients also had a right to air out all these matters on the merits, and your clients chose as well to stipulate. So we have what we have. We have an agreement. Now we have a motion to terminate that is properly filed. The question is, what standard at that motion should the judge have applied?
They should apply the new law, maybe 319, clear and convincing evidence, and they have to show change in circumstances. There has been no change in circumstances.
In answer to Justice Stigich's question of a few moments ago, if we apply the new law and your reading of it, he has lost his parental preference.
You're saying
he has to come in and show changed circumstances, regardless of his...
Your Honor, if you were to remand the case back, what would even be the standard that judge would even apply?
Wouldn't it be a Litz type standard? I mean, he comes in, if he has the parental preference, he's not showing changed circumstances. He doesn't have that burden.
He has to show something has changed. He can't just keep beating a dead horse and settle the matter and then decide to get buyer's remorse.
But if the guardianship stipulation had been to a permanent guardianship and a determination of unfitness, that would be one thing, but it wasn't. It was a stipulation to preserve the guardianship such as it was, temporary, permanent, who knows. But there's no relinquishment of parental preference in that stipulation. That's the problem.
It was not found, Your Honor, because we didn't proceed with the evidentiary hearing that day. And the judge, in going back and having to actually type up and answer without having a hearing to the new motion and petition for reconsideration and petition to terminate the guardianship again, went behind the pleadings and listed all the facts that she had based her conclusion on, which she based it on the statute that was in effect, and did not speak to the parties. I was there. Okay. The parties agreed themselves as to what they wanted. And they had their day in court. They decided to settle on all areas. The guardianship would remain in place with my clients. The appellant would receive...
I don't see anything that indicates this is a permanent termination of his parental rights in favor of the guardians.
No, and Your Honor, we had actually started this case off with a petition to terminate parental rights as well, which was denied by Judge Elliott, and we proceeded then with the guardianship case and the custody case that appellant had brought forward. But no, there was a path set forward that
includes him from coming back in and saying, I want to terminate this guardianship now, and going to the parental preference. What is the policy behind the parental preference, especially as it applies here?
Your Honor, he has and could file continuous petitions and motions, which he has. I told you he's filed four.
Correct, but has anybody determined whether or not parental preference applies? You're saying there has to be a change of circumstances, and that really undercuts and undermines the whole policy behind parental preference.
Well, I'm applying it to the new law, which I believe is what should be in effect when we go back to lower court, is what's current law. It's not going to be the old statute. If parental preference was not found, that was based on the fact that the party stipulated.
But why can't it be found subsequently?
It can be found subsequently, but we've been to court so many times and nobody has addressed that. We were just in front of Judge Kathy Hardcastle in mid-July, Your Honor, on another motion and petition to terminate guardianship.
Is that part of this record?
I don't believe the order was submitted, but that was the newest order. It was in August, and I do have a copy if you'd like one. However, I don't believe it was submitted. But she, again, found that a letter needs to be, there's a letter that needs to be exchanged. My clients are to come up with a list of things that they would like for the appellant to do.
Counsel, did anyone bother to raise the issue that this matter was pending before this court, before it went back into court?
Absolutely, and that is actually part of the order that Judge Hardcastle, Mr. Hoffman prepared the order, and she signed off on it, and they had the wrong date for oral arguments. They had September 16th down in the order. A bunch of different mistakes were in there, but at the end of the day, she reheard this matter. Different judge, not Judge Elliott. So, I mean, how many times can we go in front of the lower court on different and separate motions?
To be very blunt, until it gets it right. I don't know which way is right, but following the law, whatever that happens to be in this case, that's why it's before us, is what the district court needs to do. And I'm not opining one way or the other what the right law is.
Your Honor, just to let you know, even if it did go, we would win, because there's safety concerns, failure to supervise the child, weapons involved, domestic violence.
I'm talking about parental unfitness, and that's a completely different animal.
But I also am beginning to wonder procedurally, and I'm sympathetic to the number of times you and your clients have been back to court on this. By the same token, the parental preference is constitutionally based and problematic. But I'm wondering whether or not what's left of this order before us and why there wasn't a honeycut remand.
There was, Your Honor. May I answer?
Yes, please.
There was a honeycut remand, and I believe Judge Elliott filed that under the Supreme Court. She filed it. It should be part of the record, but it's not. I do have an e-filed copy of a honeycut remand that Judge Elliott filed on her own to the Supreme Court. But it was not made part of the Supreme Court record. I don't know why.
What about this recent Hardcastle hearing? I hate getting out of the record like this, but it sounds to me like this has moved forward and you guys have not supplemented or moved to remand.
Your Honor, that order was very brief. There was language in a previous order that Judge Elliott had asked that the parties shall come up with a list, meaning that my clients shall come up with a list of...
But that's never been litigated or determined as an evidentiary matter, correct?
No, Your Honor. That was after the fact. That was actually, I believe, in the order that the order after the evidentiary hearing. We did not provide the list. Appellant then brought forward another motion, and Judge Hardcastle said the language was not shall provide a list, because I said it shall. That means maybe we will, maybe we won't. She said you guys will exchange a list. Now, what goes in this list? My clients have to basically let Dad know what they want in order to dissolve.
Pretty considerably.
I'm
concerned we're arguing way outside this.
Yeah,
it's interesting. Ms. Cruzzi, is it your position that the new statute should have been applied? And is it your reading that the new statute in a consensual guardianship eliminates the parental preference?
The new statute should have been applied to when? May 22nd?
No, to the termination, the motion to terminate the guardianship. Should the new statute have been applied?
I believe it should have, because We were just in front of the court in July, like 2 months ago. So, yes, I do believe.
So in applying the new statute, which subsection 2 says that if it's a consensual guardianship, jump up to 1A, mm-hmm. and 1A seems to shift the burden to the person challenging the guardianship. Is that correct? So do you want to...
I can't get behind the thought process of what that judge was thinking.
I'm asking for your thought process. Do you believe this statute, as applied here, eliminates the parental preference?
I do not. And again, we did have the hearing. The judge made her rulings, and this is where we're at.
Okay.
So I thank the court.
From your standpoint, if you had to write the order from this court, how would you write the order?
I would keep everything as is. And if he wants to bring another motion or petition to terminate guardianship, it will be under AB 319. And that's it. I mean, everybody has had their day in court, several days in court. When the parties stipulated to keep the guardianship in place, it was not one that was taken lightly. It was one that was meant to be permanent. This father has only been in every other weekend type of dad. Okay, that's all he wanted. When he had to pay the child support amount of $7,500 is when he went and hired Bradley Hoffman. He has buyer's remorse because now his FDF is on file, his gross monthly income is on the record, and now he has a child support order and a child support arrearages order, which he had to pay. This okay, is
counsel,
called...
Counsel, you're going back over the facts, which you already stated, and your time is up at this point. We thank you. Counsel, you have 2 minutes for rebuttal. That they've taken that this matter should be final. Why shouldn't it be final?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
They've taken the position that the order of the lower court should be final at this point. What's your position as to that?
Our position is that the guardianship is not final, that my client can come back in at any period of time and file a petition which to terminate the guardianship, and that the parental preference applies. It's never been applied. We filed motions and motions and motions and tried to explain to the court, educate the court, in which to show that the parental preference is well-established law of the land. He was browbeaten into signing an order to avoid the hearing, which he's being told by the court that he has the burden of clear and convincing evidence, and he didn't choose so. That's how that order was put into place. And Judge Elliott even said that in his subsequent order. That's what she said.
Is there any obligation to show a change of circumstance?
No, Your Honor. And to there was motions which were filed afterwards in which we did make a Honeycutt request. That Honeycutt request was not was denied, and the court issued another type of an order in which to do other things inconsistent with NRS Section 159A-1905, which is AB 319. And AB 319 has two provisions in it, and I believe that Justice Sigrid, you're pointing to the second part of it, which you're saying that if there is a consent, I have a copy of the statute right here. I didn't see that consent portion of it. It just, what I read the second part to say is that there's return to suitability. So if there's return to suitability, which would give the belief that there was a finding before unsuitability, which there's never been in this case.
It says if the parent consented to the guardianship and it was created, the parent is required to make only that showing set forth in paragraph A of subsection 1. Paragraph A of subsection 1 suggests you have to show a material change, and that as part of the change of circumstances, the parent has been restored to suitability. So that would seem to me to get rid of the parental preference.
And it's our belief that that's unconstitutional.
Right.
It flies in the face of completely of all the cases which this court has heard, and in by the U.S. Supreme Court. And it goes against the underlying of the code and the statutes, which says that parents, it talks about parents in all the statutes, is that parents are determined to be parents at any period of time, and that they have joint legal and joint physical rights of their child before determination is made by the court.
Thank you. We thank counsel for their spirited arguments this day on something that is of significant importance. Children, we are always concerned with, and how the law treats them and their parents, and other adults who are concerned as to their well-being. With that, we'll stand in recess till 11:30 when we will pick up with Nunnery versus State. This matter.